Hey guys, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we're going to keep going with this series about Caesar's Messiah. Again, in review, this is the concept that was brought to the forefront recently. It's actually a spin of some older theories, but most recently brought to the forefront by an author, Joseph Atwill. He has a book that he wrote back in 2005 called Caesar's Messiah, and it's about the Roman conspiracy to invent Jesus. And now he's got this film documentary also called Caesar's Messiah. It is the concept that Jesus never existed, but rather is a Roman creation. The Flavians got together. They were sick and tired of these rebellious Jews. And even though they pounded the Jews into the dirt, destroyed Jerusalem, took the temple down stone by stone, utterly decimating the faith of the Jews, for whatever reason, they decided, boy, these rebellious Jews, we got to put them down somehow. So they enlisted this guy, Josephus, who is a very well-known historian nowadays, and some other Jewish scholars. And they do extensive research on the Old Testament, coming up with a good picture of who this Messiah should be, using all these messianic prophecies. And then they construct this entire New Testament, all right, 40 years after the death of Christ. So somewhere around 73 AD, they come up with this entire New Testament. All of the events that happen in the New Testament, that would be the Gospels and the Book of Acts, friends, okay? The events of the Book of Acts really do push right up close to 73 AD. Whoops. And so somehow the Jews bite onto this hook and take the bait. And we have this new religion that is born. And the joke is on us Christians because we've been following this Roman joke by the Flavian family for 2,000 years. What evidence does he have for this theory? Well, there apparently is a code between Josephus's writings, especially Jewish war, and the New Testament that proves that the Flavian family wrote the New Testament. In the film Caesar's Messiah, several claims are made, things like there's no archaeological evidence for Jesus. Also, there's no physical description of Jesus. Well, that's actually true. That'd be the one thing that's true. That Jesus is a composite of several messianic characters, all of which who got crucified. And I suppose that it was dark for 3 hours during this crucifixion and there was an earthquake. But never mind, I'm sure he won't mention that. I'm not even sure who he's referring to. Messianic characters who got crucified. But anyway, whatever the case, we have all these events that go down and somehow the Jews go ahead and buy into this theory anyway. And supposedly this is due to some parallels between the Gospels and Josephus's works. Now, if you do not have this Ovaltine secret decoder ring, you will not be able to truly see these parallels. Now, I know I'm really making a joke of this. I apologize. I normally don't act this way, but this is kind of comical. When we finally get to these parallels towards the end of the series, you're going to find that there really is no match. But don't let that stop you. Don't let that stop Joseph Atwill, because if the parallel fits, which they don't, but if it fits, well, that's proof that Josephus wrote both the Gospels, or at least had a hand in it, and he wrote, you know, his other works. If it kind of fits, sort of fits, or really doesn't fit much at all, that's proof that Josephus wrote it as well, because Josephus was writing in code. He was trying to veil the fact that he was writing this. So basically, Atwill wins whether it fits or it doesn't fit. That is, by definition, unfalsifiable. In other words, you can't prove it wrong. It's kind of like saying life came from non-life millions of years ago. Well, I don't know, guys. There's no cameras there. We didn't see it happen. And nobody can recreate this in a laboratory somewhere where we have conditions that are exactly like what the early Earth was like, which, of course, is a lot of conjecture. And then suddenly life comes from non-life and reproduces itself and starts evolving. We don't have that. It's unfalsifiable. You can't prove it wrong, but it just happened. So, whatever the case, yesterday we talked about the fact that the Flavians came up with this story, and even though the events of the Gospels, and especially the entire book of Acts and all the events that happened there, led right up to this 73 AD time when they wrote these Gospels, supposedly, and nobody called them out on this, given that, you know, all these people were pretty much alive during the time of these events, and nobody saw them, if this really was a made-up fiction. On Chris White's video entitled Caesar's Messiah Debunked, he says this, and it's kind of comical the way he says it, and I want to read this to you, but in his video he says, so this guy was going around raising the dead, healing leprosy, healing the sick. He became a rock star all throughout Israel, where crowds routinely got up to 5,000. He had all these royal rumbles with rulers and public places, turning over tables in the temple, etc. He was even crucified on the Passover when an eclipse and an earthquake happened, and no one ever said, hey, I don't remember seeing any of that. I don't know anyone that ever did. My parents never spoke of it. What the heck? I'll die for that. That's a good video. It's a 10-minute video, Caesar's Messiah Debunked. I mean, if you type that into YouTube, you're going to find it. It's like 10 minutes. And in 10 minutes, Chris White pretty much sums it up. This theory is bunk. But we're going to go into a little more depth than that. But if you want to get a really quick one, that video is great. I love it. Another thing that's interesting, and I've brought this up a few times now, in this book, Caesar's Messiah, we have this concept of this fictional account coming about because the Romans wanted to take care of these rebellious Jews. They kept causing rebellions. But the simple fact is they had already beaten the Jews into submission. But whatever the case, they wanted the Jews to calm down and stop rebelling. And so they invent this story about a Messiah who was a Jew who fit all the Old Testament prophecies. He did all of these amazing things. And then the Romans had him crucified on a Roman cross. I got a big head and little arms. I just don't know how well you thought this through, Master. Master? It just doesn't make any sense. We got this book that is saying that the Romans came up with this Messiah, but the Romans, it was their cross that had Jesus crucified. So now what? The Jews are going to read through these Gospels. You know, these rebellious Jews, these Sicarii, if you will, they're going to read the Gospels and they're going to be like, yes, the Messiah. Of course, in the Sicarii, they were looking for a conquering Messiah. But whatever the case, they're reading through it and they're going, oh, this Messiah is kind of peaceful right now. He's a nice guy. Okay, all right, I like him. And, well, you know what? It does fit the prophecies of the Old Testament. Wait a minute. The Romans killed him. And then what? And now we're back to start again. Because now they're really angry at the Romans for killing their Messiah. And by the way, guys, Jesus was not exactly a pacifist. All right? He, of course, yes, turned the other cheek, which of course is referring to those times when you're being persecuted. But at the same time, this is a Jesus that also said things like this. Oh, well, Matthew chapter 10, verse 34 through 37. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against his mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. Now, wait, I'm going to stop right there. And I'm going to add a concept, all right? I'm not adding the scripture here, but you know, Jesus is saying, he that loveth mother father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And I guess you could pretty much add to that, he that loveth Rome or the Caesars more than me is not worthy of me. All right. He that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy than me. So as a Christian, as a follower of Christ, who are we to be giving allegiance to? Caesar or to Jesus? We're giving allegiance to Jesus. And now guys, look at Revelation chapter 19:15. We're talking about a Messiah, and this is what is said about him. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, and he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. So we have a Messiah that's coming back in the last days, and he's going to put the entire world under submission, all right, whoever's left. This is not a pacifist Messiah, all right? And this is a Messiah that all authority in heaven and in earth has been given unto me. That's what Jesus says. Now think about that for a second. This is a Messiah we have people like Peter, one of the apostles, saying we ought to obey God rather than men. This is not exactly a pro-Roman doctrine. All right. This is not, hey, worship the Messiahs, worship the Caesars, and burn incense to their gods. All right. No, this is our allegiance being to Christ and Christ alone. Matthew 4, chapter 4, verse 10. Then saith Jesus unto him, get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Now, according to Chris White's film, you know, he makes this claim that not worshiping the Roman gods and burning incense to them and such was considered a matter of national security to the Romans. Now, when I first heard that, I kind of raised an eyebrow. I'm thinking, Chris, what's up with that? Is that true? And I started looking around on the internet. And sure enough, the more I read about them, that does seem to be the case. They took that very seriously. They believed that basically their gods, okay, and this is, I guess, fairly common amongst many different nations, but they believed that their rulers, their dead emperors, their gods defended Rome, all right? And so when you did not make sacrifice to them, when you worshipped other gods and chose not to worship them, you were actually angering these gods of Rome, all right? And by doing that, now you've caused a national security problem because, you know, the gods are not going to defend you when somebody's attacking. There would be times when the Senate would actually decree public rights, all right? And this would be where everybody, including women and children, would come to the temple and make offerings and supplications to the gods of Rome, all right? And this was a commanded thing, and this was to be done with reverence. Doing these offerings and these sacrifices to these gods, you really had to do this in reverence and in the right fashion, or you would bring their anger down upon the country. Conversely, offering to these gods, the hope is to bring social harmony and prosperity to Rome. Now, we're going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow because here we have a group of people who refused to make offerings to these other gods. All right. Now, according to Joseph Atwill, that's because they'd been reading these gospels and these other books, these epistles, that were written, according to Joseph Atwill, by Josephus and some other Jewish scholars in order to dupe these Jews. Now, this is really shooting your own Roman feet because now you've got this whole group of Jews who, sure, maybe they're not rebelling against Rome, but now they're not offering to these Roman gods. Good job, Flavian family, because now you've got a new problem. Now, really, now think about this. You really think the Flavians wrote this? I mean, they did all of this extensive research into Jewish culture. They did, I mean, they really did, if this is true, a fantastic job of writing a book full of wisdom. We're talking 27 chapters long. It's a decent size piece of literature that you just can't spin off typing up on Word. Okay, this was a big process. And somehow they forgot this whole worshiping Titus thing, because the whole point is to worship Titus, right? You want these Jews to be worshiping Titus unawares, but now they're refusing to make prayer, supplication, and offerings to the Roman gods. But they're supposedly worshiping Titus unawares, but now they're bringing the anger of the gods down on the Romans. Fail. Massive fraud. Fail. And so we'll stop right there. Tomorrow I want to show you some writings, something by Pliny the Younger and his writing to Trajan and his response back to Pliny the Younger about these Christians who just refuse to make offerings to the Roman gods. And what are we to do with all these Christians? Because they refuse to make offerings, and this is a big problem. And so we're going to show you a historical writing by Pliny the Younger on this very subject. So I'm going to stop right there. Friends, if you like this podcast and you want to talk to me about it, you can catch me on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, and myworldview.com. That's a new one out there. It is only conservative Christians on there. It's a great social media website. Honestly, you're not going to get all of the junk that you normally would see on Facebook. Nonetheless, of course, you know, if you want to try and use that as ministry, well, you're ministering to other Christians and you're not going to reach the lost there. But I mean, it's awesome. Iron sharpens iron, right? So check that out too if you haven't seen it yet. Anyway, with that, I love you guys and I'll see you tomorrow.